Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad to be here in a very consequential week. We'll find out if the Democrats are going to rotate their president out, their nominee out. Just happened to be the active president of the United States, who is hosting the 75th anniversary celebration of 75 years of NATO. And Matt Taibbi joins us at the bottom of the hour. And just talks about how the press has been covering this and covering up press for the president of the United States. But one of the big subtext, the subtext about what's happening right now is the first war in Eastern Europe. And we're watching this take place over the last 2 years, and we're watching, seeing how NATO responds. And we have a desperate President Zelensky, who they said was going to be wiped out in 4 days, now holding on for 2 years, but desperate to get the weapons he needs in a timely fashion without restrictions in order to fend off the Russian bear. And joining us now, a man who has been doing incredible work behind the scenes and in front of the camera to make sure the world knows that Russia has to be stopped. Secretary General of NATO, Stoltenberger, joins us. Mr. Secretary, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me again. It's great to be back.
Congratulations on your award, the Medal of Freedom. What was that like, getting that?
That was a great honor and a big surprise. And for me, this is a recognition of the work the whole alliance have done over the last years to ensure that we protect 1 billion people living in North America and Europe in a more dangerous world, not least against Russia, but also against throwing the increasing challenges that China is posing to our security.
We all saw around the world what was happening in front of the camera. Can you bring us behind the scenes? President Zelensky, desperate to get the weapons he needs in a timely fashion to keep his country alive without restrictions. Word behind the scenes was they're pushing President Biden to allow them to blow up these weapons depots, the places where the Russians are attacking, even if it's inside Russia. Did you guys make any progress convincing him?
First of all, I think we need to realize that, of course, Ukraine will like to have as much as possible, as soon as possible, with no restrictions. At the same time, they realize that, of course, there are some limits when it comes to how much allies are able to provide, at least in the short term. But what we have seen is unprecedented support from European allies and the United States. We had some gaps and delays this winter. Now we have all stepped up, and allies have also reduced the restrictions on the use of weapons against military targets on the territory of Russia. That is also the case for the United States. Some allies have no restrictions at all. So we are moving in the right direction with more weapons and also opening up for use those weapons against Russian military targets.
Thanks to work for people like you, the president went from no HIMARS to HIMARS, no Patriots to Patriots. After 2 years, we're finally ready to get them F-16s. Now no attack-ems to getting attack-ems. Now to don't hit in Russian territory. Now you can hit in Russian territory, but let's go and push the Russians back from where they're hitting Ukraine from. Do you believe you made any progress? Do you think there's going to be an announcement, or is this something you don't announce, that Ukraine just does it?
So, first of all, it's not obvious that everything has to be or should be announced.
Good.
Second, as I said, there are several allies who have delivered weapons, including, for instance, cruise missiles, long-range missiles, without any restrictions. So this has enabled the Ukrainians to strike military targets on the territory of Russia. And we need to understand what this is. This is a war aggression. Russia has attacked a neighbor, Ukraine, and Ukraine has, according to international law, the right for self-defense. And the right for self-defense includes also the right to hit legitimate military targets on the territory of the aggressor, meaning Russia. So the Ukrainians are doing that to a larger extent now than they did just a few months ago. And, of course, this was an issue also addressed at the NATO summit with all the allies present.
So yesterday you said, Mr. Secretary, China has become an enabler of Russia's war against Ukraine, and China's support increases the threat to U.S. Atlantic security. They answered back, the Chinese mission did, to the EU and said, We never provide lethal weapons to either party of the conflict. NATO should stop hyping up the so-called China threat and provoking confrontation. So I'm going to give you a chance to answer them.
There's no doubt that China is the main enabler of Russia's war against Ukraine. It may be correct that they are not delivering lethal weapons, but they're delivering all the tools, all the equipment that Russia needs to build these lethal weapons. So they provide almost all the microelectronics, the microprocessors, the dual-use equipment that Russia uses to build missiles, bombs, aircraft, to attack Ukraine. And the important message from NATO allies is that this is the first time 32 allies so clearly put the onus on Beijing, on China, being responsible for enabling Russia's brutal war of aggression. That's a clear message to China and a clear warning that this will impact their interest if this continues.
Chinese foreign minister said NATO is threatening China's interest by extending its reach into Asia. He said the alliance should avoid messing up Asia the way it messed up Europe.
Well, what we see is that China is coming closer and closer to us in Europe. They are exercising now, as we speak, with Belarus, a neighbor to NATO allies in Europe, but also a neighbor to Ukraine. And Chinese soldiers are exercising with Belarusian soldiers. China has signed a security agreement with Russia, and they state that their partnership is without limits. So what we see is that Moscow, Beijing, China, Russia are more and more aligned, and this also demonstrates that what happens in Ukraine today may happen in Asia, Taiwan tomorrow, and there is a close link between European security and Asian security, the security in the Asia Pacific. So therefore, it is so important that Putin doesn't win in Ukraine, because that will not only embolden him to use military force, it will also embolden Xi and China to use military force. So this is a clear demonstration of how our security is interlinked.
But Mr. Secretary, people look at this and say the Russians have lost hundreds of thousands of men trying to take Ukraine, and they've been frustrated, even though they've had some success. They've taken, I think, 17% of the country, and we know this is unprovoked attack. They made up that Ukraine's run by Nazis. It's ludicrous. But they say there's no way they're looking to spread further. Ukraine's unique. What proof do you have that they're looking beyond Ukraine?
Well, we have seen an aggressive pattern by Russia over the last years. First, they went into Georgia, then they annexed Crimea back in 2014. Then, after a few months, they went into eastern Donbass, and then they waited for some years, and then they launched a full-scale invasion. So we have seen this aggressive pattern. At the same time, we don't see any imminent threat, military threat against any NATO ally. But that's because they are NATO allies. That's because NATO has been successful in preventing any armed attack against any NATO ally for 75 years by sending a very clear message to Moscow that an attack on all, that an attack on one will be an attack on all, one for all and all for one. So that's the purpose of NATO is actually not to fight the war, to wage war. The purpose of NATO is to prevent war, is to preserve peace. And we have done that successfully for 75 years by standing together and promise to protect each other. This is good for Europe, but it's also very good for the United States. A strong NATO is good for the United States. The U.S. is big, 25% of the world economy, but together with NATO allies, we are 50%, twice as big, 50% of the world economy. So a strong NATO makes also the U.S. safer and stronger.
If the war ends tomorrow, does Ukraine become, are they on a fast track to become a member of NATO?
I'm not able to give you a specific timeline, but we made a very strong statements at the summit that Ukraine will become an ally. We call it an irreversible path towards membership. But in many ways, more important than the language we agreed are actually the actions we agreed to take. So action speaks louder than words. We agreed to build up a big NATO command to ensure that Ukraine gets the military assistance training they need. We agreed a financial pledge for Ukraine to ensure that we send a strong message of enduring support for Ukraine. And we did many other things to provide more air defense, more ammunition to Ukraine. This is important because the stronger our support and the longer term we are ready to commit to, the sooner this war will end. Because this war will end when President Putin realizes that he will not win on the battlefield. He has to sit down and accept that Ukraine prevails as a sovereign independent nation. So
right.
Strong, long-term military support is the way to end this war soon.
Here's what President Biden said yesterday. Cut 15.
Well, look, I think, how can I say this without sounding too self-serving? I've not had any of my European allies come up to me and say, Joe, don't run. What I hear them say is, you've got to win.
Is that the sentiment among the other 30 members of NATO, that they should have Joe Biden win, not Donald Trump?
Well, NATO is the most successful alliance in history because we have been able to stay out of domestic politics, remain a bipartisan issue in the United States and across the alliance. And therefore, I think it's important that we continue to ensure that we stay out of domestic issues. This is a domestic issue. It's not for NATO to have any opinion about who is going to be elected as next president or prime minister in any NATO allied country.
Was Donald Trump successful in getting NATO members to pay more?
Well, former President Trump had a very clear message that European allies had to pay more. This has been a message from consecutive U.S. administrations, and this message have had an impact. Not many years ago, only three allies spent 2%, the NATO guideline of GDP on defense. Now it's 23 allies, and that's record high. And more allies are spending significantly more than 2%. Actually, several allies are now spending more than the United States on defense, measured as share of GDP. So this is a huge shift, and this demonstrates that message has had an impact, and European allies in Canada have stepped up.
Ms. Secretary, we've done a tremendous job. Everybody really salutes your work you've done. What's next?
I really don't know. I was appointed the governor of the Norwegian Central Bank. I stepped down to continue in NATO. So now I don't know, but I will surely find something meaningful to do when I return to Norway in October.
You got a lot of great years left. Mr. Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
You got it. 75 years here. It's a lot to do with the success of the last 10. Listen, when we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. We'll talk about the VP stakes. We're going to talk about what the RNC is going to look like. And did President Biden do enough last night to keep his job now and try to get four more years? Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It was hard to watch, yet another hard-to-watch Biden event, and it doesn't make me... I'm not sad, and I'm not laughing at it. I'm actually pretty mad. And if Democrats really wanted to invigorate the ticket, they'd get rid of Joe Biden with a very nice thank you. Thank you for doing the job. Now it's time to move aside, and we're going to put someone in who can win millions of me, who gave the vote in the first place, and the rest of the votes that are up for grabs that are not already with Donald Trump. That they are sticking with this man is infuriating, irresponsible, and it's political malpractice.
That's Tessie Cupp, tends to be conservative, even on CNN. Trump, not a fan of Trump. I disagree with her. I think he did enough to keep it in play. This is the worst scenario. This is the worst scenario for the Democratic Party, and here's why. He wasn't perfect where you go, oh, my God, no problem. He had just had a bad night. And he wasn't terrible where you thought he's got to go. It is perfect because I'm looking at my sheet. I'm looking at my list. I got 17 Democratic House members want him out. Two senators, Michael Bennett, not formally, Himes, definitely, want him out. A lot of other people are in his camp, like the DNC chair, like Chris Coons, senator from Delaware, obviously his family, obviously his cabinet. No one's turning on him in his cabinet publicly. They say there are people in his staff who don't think he can do it, and there's a New York Times story saying they're polling to see if Kamala would be stronger. But he's not going anywhere. He made it clear he's not going anywhere. He has no idea where all the complaints are coming from. Why is it not just a bad debate? Here's a weak moment. It happened right away off the first question. Cut two.
What concerns do you have about Vice President Harris's ability to beat Donald Trump if she were at the top of the ticket?
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president.
Vice President Trump. Trump went to town on that, had a great time, and then he misgendered Trump after saying he was his running mate. He also had a terrible gaffe with Vladimir Putin, and this is probably as bad as he gets, one of his biggest ones. It's not because he's a stutterer. It's not because he was rushed. It's not because he didn't sleep a lot. Cut four.
Now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin. President Putin. You can beat President Putin. President Zelensky. I'm so focused on beating Putin, we got to worry about it. Anyway, Mr. President.
I'm better.
You are a hell of a lot better.
Right. And Zelensky can't say anything because it must be behind the scenes, must be terrible. Maybe he had a good week. They thought a couple of things. The list of reporters they had were not network reporters, was not anybody at Fox. Interesting. They wanted to get a lot of foreign policy in. He was fresh off having 2 days of meetings. He's got that background. But it just reminded me of the problem with Joe Biden. It's his policies. The added ingredient is his struggles, physically, mentally. But I hate his policies. He's bragging about the infrastructure deal. Nothing's done. He's bragging about the CHIPS Act. We don't have enough engineers. He's bragging about this spending and this economy. No one feels it. He's bragging that the border is, the numbers are down at the border. They're still outrageous. And it's a lot has to do because it's 120 degrees at the border. But you've already let over 10 million people in illegally. You've totally dropped the ball there. You're bragging about leaving Afghanistan. You're talking about getting humanitarian aid to Gaza without acknowledging Israel's hostages in the attack on October 7th. You say you're defending institutions and democracy, yet you go out of your way and you make the Supreme Court look like a criminal court because they're conservative. And then you look at things like civil service adjustment, looking at the entitlement reform, as if Donald Trump wants to do that, he wants to fight democracy. It just reminded me of the problem. It's not Kamala. It's not Joe Biden. It's what they stand for and what they do.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You earlier explained confidence in your vice president.
Yes.
If your team came back and showed you data that she would fare better against former President Donald Trump, would you reconsider your decision to stay in the race?
No, unless they came back and said, there's no way you can win me. No one's saying that. No poll says that.
It is so weird. I wish someone would tell him to stop that. It doesn't do anything except flip people out and creep people out. But now you know the signal. David Axelrod came out and tweeted right after that. I don't know what he uses social media as a tool. But after he heard that, he had a very good statement. He said, If what he said at the end of his press conference is true, it sounds like Biden's team has not been very candid with him about what data is showing. The age issue is a huge and potentially insurmountable concern, and his odds of victory are very, very slim. Matt Taibbi joins us now. Matt Taibbi has cut his own wake on Substack. He's got a new article out talking about maybe another match between Hillary and Trump, too. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Sir, first off,
crazy audio.
I mean, what is the whispering thing? I mean, people should tell him that doesn't, it's not effective. I don't know what you're talking about. But last night, did he do enough to quell some of the concerns?
So most of the reactions that I've seen from people in kind of the Democratic media seem to think that last night was the worst case scenario because he did just well enough to make an argument that he could possibly make it all the way through. But there were just enough crazy moments that they'll be viral and it will never stop being a news issue. So, you know, between the thing where he, you know, talked about having Vice President Trump, you know, and how she's done a great job for him and all that, and the whispering, it's very strange. He's like he's having an internal monologue with himself with the whole country watching.
Right. And he keeps on also making us believe what we pretty much know now. He's not in charge. Listen to this. Cut five.
With that, I'll take your questions. I've been given a list of people to call on here. Reuters, Jeff Mason.
All right. I'm giving a list. I mean, come on. He keeps saying that. I better shut up. I'm going to get mad. I'm going to get myself in trouble.
I mean, I don't know why people aren't more upset about that. I mean, on top of everything else, we have a right to know who's actually making the decisions. I mean, if the missiles launch tomorrow, who's going to get that phone call? And they just keep deflecting these questions, or they're just not asking them at all. It's clearly not him. And this is something that I tried to raise when I covered Biden on the campaign trail in 2020. And, you know, sort of other people in the press corps didn't want to hear it. But it's an incredibly important issue, don't you think?
Absolutely. So Matt, what did you pick up in 2020? Do you see a big difference, even though you're not covering him every day, from what he is in 2024?
Yeah, he's much worse now. But there were very serious signs back in 2020, and I had covered him in 2008 as well. So you know, he had a lot of problems, especially when dealing with audience members. You know, when he would go on the campaign trail in places like Iowa, people would ask him relatively harmless questions, and he would lose his temper. He would poke them in the chest. He would, you know, challenge them to push-up contests. He would insult them. He would forget what state he was in. His emotional affect was all over the place. And then I think the biggest sign was that he would misrepresent or lie about his positions about things like the war in Iraq. But it was now clear that he didn't know that he was doing that, whereas before it seemed intentional. And I think that was the big hint that there was something very bad happening.
So I always think about a guy like you who's just calling balls and strikes. You were watching Jake Tapper actually act like Sean Hannity, pulling up clips, finding stories. In fact, Eric, I hate to do this to you, but is there the Chuck Todd from yesterday? All of a sudden, all these media members are finding all the problems with the presentation that President Biden is giving. And now we're behind the scenes that the staff is afraid of him, afraid to tell him any bad news. And then I listen to Chuck Todd say this and think this is good, make him look good. Listen.
I had a cabinet secretary 2 years ago.
Right.
Okay. 2 years ago, all out of the blue, ask me, do you really think he's going to, he can't run again like this? And I said, well, you have more interaction with him than I do. And they said, I don't have a lot of interaction with him. This is a pretty senior cabinet secretary. So, and this was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, he held onto the story. He was host of Meet the Press on Sunday. You think he would have been able to squeeze that in, the anti-Trump rhetoric, the January 6th questions? By the way, something of concern, an esteemed member of the cabinet told me that the president doesn't meet with them and doesn't really is failing to the point where he doesn't think he could run for re-election. Is that astounding that he's not aware enough to know how bad he looks?
It is astounding, but it's incredibly revealing, isn't it? I mean, I think they've been out of the business of being actual journalists for so long that they don't realize how that sounds to ordinary audiences. You know, you have an obligation. As soon as somebody tells you something like that, you've either got to find a way to get that story out, even if your source doesn't want you to do it. You know, you can't just let that go and then bring it up 2 years later. That's absolutely crazy. Now you're just as responsible as anyone else is. And the fact that they're all turning on him now and, you know, doing these aggressive interviews, which
yes,
they never did before.
Never.
Right? What is that? I mean, it's incredible that they don't know. At least Biden has an excuse. He's losing his mind. You know, whereas these folks don't.
Right. But you know what the whole thing is astounding? They want to pretend as if we didn't pick up the change in tone. I watched Jake Tapper. I mean, I thoroughly thought, and I wrote this. I said, I think he stole Sean Hannity's teleprompter because there was no difference in their openings, except for it was a different time of day. And I was struck by this Washington Post op-ed today. I'm sure you were, too. Written by Megan McArdle. She said, quote, we should do this. The name is How the Media Sleepwalked into Biden's Debate Disaster. And she calls for more diversity in the newsroom. And I know you're thinking more Asians, more Hispanics, more women. No, more conservatives. Interesting. She said, we should not do this for the benefit of conservative journalists or politicians, but for the benefit of our readers. When our newsrooms lopsidedly support one party, our readers miss much of the story. In this case, nearly all of it. We need conservatives inside this building helping us overcome our natural biases. Instead of outside complaining about them, we owe our readers, we owe our country nothing less. Sounds like you.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. She's absolutely right. Now, Megan and I used to argue about finance things 15 years ago, but she's completely right here. And it's not an issue of ideology. It's an issue of fact. If you go back to 2016, the New York Times was under tremendous criticism after the election because they miscalled it, because they told their readers over and over again, there's no way this is ever going to happen. Donald Trump will never get elected. They miscalled the nomination. And their response was to hire Bret Stephens, but they never really made structural changes. And again, it's not about making your readers more or less happy about the tone of the report of the reports. It's about being correctly informed. And they missed that story and this story because they don't know anybody who cares enough about it.
Matt, would there be a freedom, a free press if Barry Weiss didn't get so fed up with the New York Times? She went and did her own thing, because if she brought up questions like that and she is not a conservative, she was basically ostracized. I mean, remember the Tom Cotton story where they asked him what he would do with the rioters? And he said, I would call in the National Guard. And a lot of people walked out. They had an insurrection because how dare you let Tom Cotton, a sitting senator, write a conservative column? And that's really the ripple effect gave us the free press, right?
Well, right. And what happened there in that particular incident was really important, because now editors are afraid. You know, once they saw what happened to James Bennett, who lost his job after the Tom Cotton episode, now they all know what the score is. They all know that if they cross their own staff and the staff doesn't like the things that they publish, that they may lose their jobs, and somebody's going to backdoor them and go to the publisher, and they're going to end up being fired. And you can't have that situation. This is why editors are put in charge, is precisely to make these tough calls and to defy sometimes your reporters and force them to report on what's true and maybe what they don't like. And that system got broken down in the last, you know, 6 or 7 years.
So I feel terrible for this black talk show host at the small station that President Biden called into. Evidently, they gave her 8 questions to choose from. She chose 4 and asked the questions. Now, you wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that. But you picture this, the city reporter host gets a call from the White House. The president wants to come on. Made bad judgment. She got fired. I don't know if the president called and apologized for using the questions. But the White House tried to manipulate a small station. And then we find out this Wisconsin radio station was asked to scrub and edit two parts of an interview that they did on delayed tape, one of which talked screwed up the story about Donald Trump and the Central Park Five, and the other one said he's had more than double black cabinet members than anybody else in history. And they said both those things were, well, don't make the president look good, so get rid of him, and they did. What about that pressure for the White House? And what about what they are insisting of, especially in a time which the scrutiny is so great?
You just can't have that situation at all. One of the things, the big things that's changed in the business, and Brian, I'm sure you're aware of this too, is that in the past, when the White House or a powerful member of Congress, when they were upset about an article, they might call, but they would be very polite. They would say, "We think you got this wrong. Would you consider making this correction?" Now they call up and they give orders. And there's been a dramatic kind of change in tone because there's constant communication between, you know, the White House and the senior editors at big newspapers. And they really act like they have a right to come in and tell you editorially what to do. The only time they should ever be calling at all is when there's an issue of fact. And even then, they only get to ask. They don't get to tell you what to do, you know? And these media outlets, they've lost all sense of independence. They don't understand that that's where all their power comes from, is the ability to tell these institutions no. And that is a tragic thing for the whole business.
There is. Today, and just Phil, it feeds into your column, it turns out Hillary Clinton, at a closed-door fundraiser for some with a venture capitalist, she mocked the fact that that Joe Biden's old and addled, said it reminds me of when a senior citizen, you just got to take away their car keys. And ultimately, then everyone laughed. And ultimately, she said it's going to be up to people closest to him or their family to decide to push Joe Biden out. But that's her view of Joe Biden. You write, could this be a Hillary Trump too? Do you really believe that?
So very quietly, we've started to see her name appear in news stories. Politico published a poll by a firm called Bendison and Amandi that showed her outperforming really any of the rumored possible replacements for Biden. She actually leads Trump by 2 points in one poll they conducted. The Hill did a story on that as well. So even though she's kind of been kept out of the news, I think probably some editors didn't want to scare the public with the idea that she would be returning to the lineup. But the fact is that she leads one of the two main power centers in the Democratic Party, the other being led by Barack Obama. And she's the candidate who probably has the most name recognition of anybody in America, which is going to be crucial when there's only 4 months left. So I think it's a real possibility. I don't have any inside information on that, but I would be shocked if that's not considered, at least.
Wow. Here's Howard Enten of CNN. Listen to this, cut 17.
Vice president is polling better against Donald Trump than Joe Biden is. Look, overall, what do we see? We see versus Biden, we see that Donald Trump is ahead by 3 points. But against Harris, this is nationally, we see a tie. Among independents, Donald Trump leads Joe Biden by 6 points. But among independents, the vice president is ahead by a point over Donald Trump. So she does better in the center of the electorate. She does better overall.
Your thoughts about that matchup, which if Biden does step aside, you got to think it's going to be her.
Well, I think there's a strong argument to be made that the delegates that belong to Joe Biden would belong to Kamala Harris if he were to step aside. So if she wants to, she could probably be the nominee if he steps aside. But I saw Harris, the Vice President Harris, on the campaign trail in 2019 and 2020. There were several different moments where the press kind of threw their weight behind her in the hope that she would become the front runner. And voters on the Democratic side overwhelmingly rejected her each time. She was completely non-viable as a national candidate. She's really not that good at that. She's good at debating, but not at campaigning. I just can't see her winning. She might run, but I don't see that she would be a good candidate.
Right. But if she goes and grabs a Governor Shapiro or Governor Whitmer in a battleground state in the Midwest, you wonder if it makes it more formidable. I talked to Trump the other day, and he just said, I'm worried about the issues. He goes, I'm running against the issues, not against the person. And when you think about what's happening in Eastern Europe and the Middle East, what's happening at the border, what's happening with inflation, that's what he wants to run against. So,
sure. Yeah. But she would be a kind of a perfect candidate for him, I think, as well, though. I mean, she's kind of a consummate party insider. you know, she's wearing a $5,000 suit on BET, talking about how she's out there in these streets. I mean, come on. She's the sort of insider phony that is perfect for Trump, and that's why I think they would do better to nominate somebody else.
And Matt Taibbi, always perfect for the show. Thanks so much, Matt. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too, Brian. Take care.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Yep, the whispers about him dropping out of the race keep getting louder. They're getting so loud, Biden can almost hear them.
We also learned today that some Biden advisors are discussing how to convince him to step aside. That is not going to be easy. Okay, they're thinking about just putting a Klondike bar on a string and pulling it slowly down Pennsylvania Avenue. Come on, let's go. Come on.
Biden's conference today was a big deal because it was unscripted. Like the whole country got invited to our grandpa's level one improv class.
That's pretty amazing. I cannot believe I'm listening to this. This is, they're going after Biden like they're going after Trump. I mean, they just totally shelved Trump in order. They're trying to knock out Biden because they're scared that Trump's going to win. They're doing everything. The comedy, the insurrection, Obama, me talking with Pelosi yesterday behind the scenes. It's insane.
It is. I mean, I think it's just such a really unique look into like what the quote unquote elites really think, right? You see this change. Like they started with late night, then Clooney put this out. Now it's like the gates are open. The donors don't like it. And they're slowly...
It's almost like there's this unsaid, like whispers happen. It's okay to hit him now. Go.
Exactly.
The writer's room and the monologues and everything. And Colbert, the worst.
Yeah.
He's the one where Joe Biden came on and talked about Bo and he cried. Now he's going for the jugular.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hello, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, but around the country, around the world. And man, we have a lot going on today. This hour is going to be joined by Howie Kurtz to put the media in perspective and what's happening over these last week, 2 weeks. I've never seen anything like it. It's upside down world where Jake Tapper sounds more to the right or more aggressive against Joe Biden than Sean Hannity. Never thought in a million years doing original reporting to blow up a White House that no one had any interest in finding out anything behind the scenes. Turns out nothing's going on. Bottom of the hour, four-star Admiral James Stavridis, the 15th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. So it's a big hour. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
On your vice president candidate, word is that you won't pick J.D. Vance because of his facial hair. Is that true?
That no. Facial hair I've never heard that one.
Number two,
no.
Doug Burgum, the thing
he
that hurts.
Like a young Abraham Lincoln.
Right. He's a handsome man. Yes. And I asked him about Doug Burgum. I asked him about Marco Rubio. There's huge pluses and there are some small minuses. The VP stakes. Who is going to emerge? Marco Rubio wrote me yesterday and said, we're all going to go dark this weekend. I asked Governor Burgum about that. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. A lot of intrigue.
Number two.
Number two is this. The RNC starts next week and we got the format. We got some of the speakers and we got all the themes.
Number one.
There was the moment at the beginning where he said Vice President Trump instead of Vice President Harris, but he did have lengthy answers on subject areas that he knows very well.
I think it's fair to say there were obviously some verbal missteps. There were some periods of haltingness, but also periods of genuinely impressive command and fluency.
Yep. Did President Biden save his presidency and reelection with his one-hour presser despite the gaffes? I say yes. Many Dems don't agree as Pelosi and Obama huddle behind closed doors. Howie Kurtz, welcome back. Host of Media Buzz, Sundays 11 o'clock until 12. Howie, great to hear from you. Your thoughts, did Joe Biden do enough to continue to run for re-election?
Not necessarily. In fact, he even acknowledged there are other people who could beat Donald Trump. Look, I can't say he hit a home run because he talked
didn't.
About Vice President Trump and rambled at various times. He also did show a great command, particularly of foreign policy. That's his thing. But he wanted to answer every question in terms of policy. That's what he's comfortable talking about. And he rambled at times. But he didn't talk much about his mental acuity. How would he be able to do this job until 86? And I blame the White House reporters because they insisted on asking these three-part questions, and the third part would be, oh, by the way, how can you do this job when you're 86? And Biden could then get away with just a very brief answer on the more personal parts about his cogency.
What a great point, Howie. I thought, you know, too bad they couldn't follow up, but instead, if you just kept it simple, it would have been easier. And I also think there's something to the roster he picked out. He got a lot of foreign policy, and that stuff that he's just went over for the last 3 days with all the leaders fresh in his mind. And he likes talking about that stuff. Even though I don't agree with his foreign policy, you can't say he doesn't know it. That's not the point. It's not whether you agree. It's whether does he know it. So there was a lot in there. And do you notice he skipped almost all the networks?
Yeah, except for CBS, I think.
Yeah. So and the last one wasn't even on mic. That's when he brought up. Here's where he made the big gaffe right before the presser. By the way, Howie, did you ever find out why they were 90 minutes late for this?
I don't know a definitive answer, but I would bet a lot of money, Brian, that they were still rehearsing. And, you know, he spent a week preparing for this, which, by the way, tells you something. I'll let you play the sound in a minute. But it really tells you something that, you know, press conferences are something that presidents are supposed to do. It's supposed to be part of the job, not in the Constitution, but part of the job. And, you know, Biden spends days prepping for this. It just shows you that he had a pretty, as long as he didn't melt down the way he did at the CNN debate, he had a pretty low bar.
I mean, this was a bad moment. Cut four.
And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin. President Putin. You're going to beat President Putin. President Zelensky. I'm so focused on beating Putin, we got to worry about it. Anyway,
I mean,
President,
I'm better.
You are a hell of a lot better.
Zelensky saved him a little bit there, but that's a pretty big move. That's a pretty big gaffe.
Absolutely no question about it. I mean, it's the worst possible introduction you could give to a guy who's fighting for his country against the madman in Moscow.
Yeah, please welcome Hitler.
yes, that's right. I also think, though, that the reason he didn't save himself, maybe bought himself a little time, is that you have even more Democrats on the Hill coming out against Biden staying in the race. Of course, nobody can force him out. And of course, it depends on what Pelosi does. And is this all going to be behind closed doors? Or are they going to actually have the chutzpah, that's the technical term, to go up and confront Biden about his fact that he is on a path to lose? They're all worried about their jobs. That's what politicians do. It's all about self-interest. And it's hard to see a path because nobody can unsee that disastrous debate that he had in Atlanta. And so it's hard to figure out how Joe Biden can win. And if he can't win, and he said, well, there are other people who could beat Trump, then why does it have to be him? And a lot of people are, I think, getting upset with him because they're grateful to this president for getting Trump out of office in 2020, and now they feel like he's going to hand the keys to the Oval back to Donald.
This is what drives me crazy, is that they have a primary process. In 2023, they knew what we know now. And maybe there's some people that thought he was fine, Chris Coons, but people that were close to him knew that he was having these failings. We watched it in 2020 because he was in his basement the whole time. We watch him reading some of the questions off the prompter and seeing things happening that shows that he really benefited from the pandemic. He was able to conduct a basement operation without any appearances. But when it came to 2023, if they wanted to win so bad, why wouldn't they have had a real primary? Donald Trump had to have a real primary. They didn't give it to him, but he made a decision not to debate. Now, if Donald Trump came out and was very rusty on the debate and did bad, Blame Donald Trump. He made a decision not to do those debates. Well, the Democrats made a decision. Clear the field. Back off RFK Jr. Make sure these governors know their place. Everybody was set back. He's bragging about 14 million primary votes. He had literally no opponents.
He had one congressman that nobody ever heard of. Look, it's hard to run against an incumbent president because you're putting your own career on the line if you're a prominent Democrat. I mean, you think Gavin Newsom's not dying to run? Gretchen Whitmer's peddling a book because she's never occurred to her that she might run? They were all hoping that something would happen. But I do think, you know, the reason Donald Trump did well in that debate, and he's obviously got a forceful personality, is that he talks to journalists all the time, even ones he doesn't like. He's not rusty. For, you know, what Biden does is that he builds up this great drama by having a once-a-year news conference or doing the Stephanopoulos interview, which was a complete and total bust. I know he's going to talk to Lester Holt on Monday. And so each one gets incredible scrutiny, and if he has a couple of missteps, it would be different if he did these regularly and they'd say, okay, he screwed that up, but he did okay over here. He creates the drama because he's been so walled off. And I do blame the press for not pushing harder on this. Now it's coming out. Oh, I talked to somebody 2 years ago, said Chuck Todd, who said he can't run again like this. Now it's all coming out. But most of us were in the dark, except for what we could see on television. And it was obvious to anybody, and I've covered this guy since the 1980s, and he used to like talking to reporters. You couldn't shut him up. Obvious to anybody that he's had a serious decline, especially in the last 6 months.
Right. So I want you to hear what I want people at home to hear Chuck Todd one more time, because you're the guy that.
Oh, I didn't know you had it.
Yeah. So let's listen.
I had a cabinet secretary 2 years ago.
Right.
Okay. 2 years ago. All out of the blue, ask me, do you really think he's going to, he can't run again like this? And I said, well, you have more interaction with him than I do. And they said, I don't have a lot of interaction with him. This is a pretty senior cabinet secretary. So, and this was 2 years ago.
So he actually thinks this is an interesting part of his career. I think it is such a damning revelation. How could he not understand how bad he looks?
Well, it's one thing to have somebody tell you something off the record where you've promised not to use it. But on the other hand, that would be a giant flashing neon light to do more digging about the president's state of mind. Like now everybody's doing it. Carl Bernstein, New York Times. We're even hearing European leaders say he's not always on it. And then, of course, George Clooney, which I think was a very big deal.
It was. So the first press conference in 8 months. Yeah, he obviously should be doing this more. It's part of the job, I believe. So Matt Taibbi was just on with us, and I played that clip, and here's what he said. Remember, he's been forced out of a lot of publications. That's his own thing on Substack now. Listen.
It is astounding, but it's incredibly revealing, isn't it? I mean, I think they've been out of the business of being actual journalists for so long that they don't realize how that sounds to ordinary audiences. You have an obligation. As soon as somebody tells you something like that, you've either got to find a way to get that story out, even if your source doesn't want you to do it. You know, you can't just let that go and then bring it up 2 years later. That's absolutely crazy. Now you're just as responsible as anyone else is.
So do you agree with that?
By and large, it depends on, you know, the journalist, but what I want to say, Brian, is that one exception was the Wall Street Journal a month ago doing hard digging and writing a piece that said Biden seems to be slipping behind closed doors, and the mainstream media came down on the Journal, and Joe Scarborough went after the Journal. This was garbage and this was crap. Well, that story obviously was just beginning to scratch the surface. So in that sense, there was a sort of a closing of the ranks by the media. I blame the press a lot. I don't necessarily believe that they were deliberately part of a cover-up, but they really fell down on the job. And therefore, when you get to, you made the point earlier about, well, you know, he won 99% of the delegates. Yeah, but most of this information about his mental problems, not to mention the examination three times by a neurologist who's a Parkinson's specialist, that was all hidden from the public. So if you reran the primaries, obviously an impossibility, there might have been a different outcome. Maybe somebody would have stood up in the party. But look, right, he's on track to lose this election. And as long as that is the case, I think the pressure is going to build. On the other hand, he may just be running out the clock. you know, as they do in basketball. He figures the closer they get to the convention in Chicago, the less chance even his political opponents from within the party. Remember, these are his people. It's not a vast right-wing conspiracy. The less chance they have to push him out.
So, Howie, I'm just going to keep you to the media on this. Page Six is reporting in the New York Post that Hillary Clinton, behind closed doors at a private fundraiser, was asked to speak, and she was asked about Joe Biden. And she says it's like trying to take the keys away from your parent when they're losing it. And everyone laughed. And then she said, ultimately, he's going to have to make his own decision or people closest to him. So that's how she feels. I mean, it's not even hidden now. Now, we don't know what Obama thinks, but he greenlighted the Clooney editorial. But yes. Hillary Clinton, behind closed doors, says that. You know, she can get him on the phone at any point. So she probably believes that.
I think the grand poobahs of the Democratic Party, and I think privately, Nancy Pelosi believes this because when she was asked the question the other day, you probably played it. She said, well, he should do whatever he wants to do and make a decision quickly. Of course, Biden's view is I've already made the decision and I'm running. So I think, I don't think Obama has orchestrated this, but I think that because he knew about the Clooney piece, I don't think Michelle Obama is running. I don't think Hillary Clinton is running. But they all see what Biden in his own, you know, confidence that he can beat Trump again, refuses to see, which is he is on track not just to lose himself, but probably to cost his party the House and the Senate. And the Republicans will control everything in Washington. And his legacy, his reputation will be very different than if he had the wisdom or the confidence to just say, OK, I did my part. I did my 4 years. It's time for somebody younger.
So, Howie, this is going to be an intriguing week. We go to Milwaukee on Sunday. We'll be bringing this show to Milwaukee, Fox and Friends to Milwaukee, One Nation to Milwaukee, and at which time we know some things that are going to be taking place. They want to make it more about individuals and their personal sagas, from inflation to the immigration. Are they going to have President Trump is obviously going to be the keynote speaker. The number two will be named by that point. Dana White will be the one speaking right before the president and introduce him. Governor Jim Justice looks to be the next senator from West Virginia, Ron DeSantis, Amber Rose, who is a model, and Kanye West's former girlfriend, who's coming out way to the right. Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters, even though he's going to be voting for Joe Biden, but he says a lot of the Teamsters aren't. So I think that's interesting. I also find it very intriguing that President Trump is going to wait this long to name a number two. When do you think he'll name it?
Well, I thought by Sunday, because I'm trying to figure out if I have to tear up my show, but there was a little notice rule change where he can hold off as late as Wednesday. Look, when he names the running mate, whether it's J.D. Vance, whether it's Marco Rubio, that will be the dominant story for the next couple of days. Waiting until Wednesday actually even has the danger of overshadowing the former president's speech. But, you know, it also adds some excitement. You know, this is the guy who did The Apprentice. Like, he knows how to unveil things. So I think it's not going to be Wednesday, but I think it's got to be by Monday or Tuesday. And then we can all obsess on that instead. I think one of the reasons he might be waiting, Brian, is let's not interfere with all the bad press that Joe Biden is getting since the disastrous debate. He's kind of just played a, you know, he's done a couple of rallies, but he's kind of played a lot of golf and let the media that supposedly loved Democratic candidates, just savage Joe Biden. And it's partially Biden's fault.
And Biden brought up last night, he doesn't do anything. All he does is golf. I've had all these appearances. Well, you know why, Joe? Because you're dominating this cycle, and he's more than willing to let you thrash. Obviously, I can't believe he doesn't pick that up. Howie, I look forward to your show on Sunday. It begins at 11 o'clock right here on Fox News Channel. Thanks so much, Howie.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, it is so hard to plan anything because so much is breaking while you're on the air, let alone what's going to be happening Saturday night at 9 on One Nation, which I hope everyone's going to be watching, among my great guests, Kimberly Strassel and Senator Tom Cotton and the Ruthless Podcast. Don't move. Your call's next.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If you stay in and Trump is elected and everything you're warning about comes to pass, how will you feel in January?
I feel as long as I gave it my all and I did the goodest job as I know I can do. That's what this is about.
That's not what this is about! There are no participation trophies in endgame democracy. Oh, yes, I remember FDR
saying, well, if the Nazis take over Europe, at least both teams had fun.
Yeah, that's the problem with John Stewart just reiterated there. Not that Joe Biden said what he said. That's up to him, and that's up to who's ever on his team and their nomination process. But they believe the alternative is utter dictatorship, end of democracy, because they think that Donald Trump is going to just tell every Democrat to go home. Yeah, they're going to do some massive things. They're going to actually go through Homeland Security and get the department working. Remember, Joe Lieberman came up with that idea, quickly endorsed by George W. Bush. No one ever thought it through. It needs to be gutted. Civil service needs to be addressed. Incentives got to be brought back. And they want to get rid of the Department of Education. They want to return it to local leaders. That's not dictatorship. And also, if you want a guy attacking institutions, look at President Biden. He's going to the Supreme Court every day.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We've allowed Zelensky to use American weapons in the near term, in the near abroad, into Russia. Whether or not he has, he should be attacked. For example, should Zelensky, he's not. If he had the capacity to strike Moscow, strike the Kremlin, would that make sense? It wouldn't. Question is, what's the best use of the weaponry he has?
Yes, and Zelensky says, yeah, let me hit the bases that are hitting us regularly, on time, with the ATACMS and with the HIMARS. And evidently, behind closed doors, the allies are also begging Joe Biden to release the handcuffs. Admiral James Stavridis knows all about the war of the region. He joins us now, the four-star admiral, 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, currently a member of the Carlyle Group, several bestsellers, including his latest 2054, a novel of the next world war. Admiral, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian. And I could not agree more with the proposition that we ought to, and I like your phrasing, take the handcuffs off Zelensky, let him strike. He's not going to strike Moscow, but he would go after the air bases that are launching these strikes. He'd go after the munitions factories. He'd go after the drone assembly points, and he'd go after the logistics centers. Those are all significant, indeed vital, targets of war that he ought to, in absolute fairness and under international law, be able to strike from Ukrainian soil.
Here's what General Keane said. He agreed with you. Cut 38.
Removing these restrictions of U.S. weapons not being able to fire at the bases and the logistical infrastructure that is all within reach of these weapon systems, the very bases that the missiles and the airplanes are coming at to attack major cities, the horrific display of a cruise missile system that was targeted specifically on a children's hospital emanates from those bases. They're off limits. Makes no sense.
Yeah, and he's been saying that, and he's been writing about that. And I know you weren't there, but they're all your friends. Do you think they made any progress?
I do. I feel a certain wavering on the part of the administration. And I think, by the way, the administration is correct not to want to go after Moscow or go after high-ranking Russians, even though you could make some arguments in that zone. But as General Jack said, and as I just said, you can make up a very, very impactful target list going after the kinds of things we both discussed. And by the way, Jack said HIMARS, ATACMS, I think you did as well. Don't forget, those F-16s are now arriving in numbers. The first 15 or so of those will be operational within a week or two. And that number, Brian, is going to go up to 80 F-16s. Those do not have to be used strictly for defensive operations. I think the idea of F-16 sorties going into Russia and going after the kind of targets we're discussing would make a lot of sense to me.
What about this back and forth with China? Kjetil Stoltenberg said, he's general secretary, he said, China has become a decisive enabler of Russia of war against Ukraine, and China's support increases the threat to U.S. Atlantic security. China's mission came back and said that said we never provide lethal weapons to either party of the conflict. NATO should stop hyping up the so-called China threat and provoking confrontation. And then their Chinese foreign minister came out and said the decision by NATO leaders to dispense diplomatic restraint over China reflects heightened geographical tensions of the war in Ukraine drags on as Beijing and Moscow push for alternatives to the U.S.-led global power. So he blames us for the carnage, and he says they're not doing anything. And the general secretary was just on with me, and he said, are you kidding? They're giving dual-use items to them, enable them to enhance their weapons manufacturing.
Indeed. And just so everyone knows, the phrase dual use means, for example, the microchip that could be in a high-end piece of consumer electronic goods can also dual use be used in an advanced drone. So for China to say we're not providing military capability, A, that's simply a lie. And then B, what really makes me crazy about the statement you read is when China says, oh, we don't provide lethal weapons to either party in this conflict. What is so hypocritical about that is only one party has invaded the other. Only one party is daily committing war crimes like striking children's hospitals. Only one party is using rape as a weapon of war, highly documented. Only one party is putting pressure on the nuclear power plant at Zaporizhia. I could go on and on. The point is, this is not a situation where any reasonable or rational observer would say, oh, there are two sides to this argument. There just aren't. And China is enabling a war criminal state in the form of Vladimir Putin.
So President Biden was asked about Israel. All he seems to talk about is the need for a two-state solution and this conservative government giving him problems. Cut 33.
Question's been from the beginning, what's the day after in Gaza? And the day after in Gaza has to be the end of the day after has to be no occupation by Israel and the Gaza Strip, as well as the ability for us to access, get in and out as rapidly as you can, all that's needed there. I've been disappointed that some of the things that I've put forward have not succeeded as well.
So he went on to say that in the West Bank, sentiments turning against the Palestinians. That's just not true.
Doesn't appear to be. And here's how I look at it, Brian. It's kind of a three-step process here. Step one is let's get a ceasefire in place, in position, one that allows humanitarian aid to flow and gets the hostages released and, frankly, gives the Israeli army a chance to rest and refit because they've got to look to that situation to the north with Hezbollah. So step one, let's get a ceasefire, 6 weeks. You can go back to combat if you need to. Step one, ceasefire. Step two, let's get a peacekeeping force into Gaza, and I think it's going to be properly composed of Arab nations. So Egypt, Jordan, probably the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, UAE, get them in there and have Israel take control of the borders around, but also have liaisons who are in Gaza operating alongside that large Arab force. But now you've got Arabs policing Palestinians. Step three, and it's off in the distance, is, okay, what are the political settlements that you could consider going forward that might include over time a two-state solution? You can't take those out of order. It's a one, two, three.
So how would you can you stop this operation without getting to Sinwar and the other higher-ups in Hamas?
If it were me advising Benjamin Netanyahu and I was an Israeli general, I would say, let's take this ceasefire deal and get our hostages out. But, Mr. Prime Minister, we have means to continue to track down and find and kill Sinwar. And sometimes revenge is a dish best eaten cold. I would also be saying to my prime minister, my army needs a break. We have called up all our reserves. They've been called up for 9 months. It's hurting the country economically. I've got to rest and refit these troops. I've got to keep an eye on what's happening to the north. Mr. Prime Minister, we'll get Sinwar, but I am comfortable with a 6-week break. I think it's to our advantage to do so.
But can you pull out with them still having the ability to hit Israeli proper with rockets?
That would require the Israel maintaining control of the borders and having liaisons with the Arab peacekeeping force. And, Brian, you're right to highlight that. That's a step two problem. You start with the ceasefire. If there are still rockets flowing, end of ceasefire.
Lastly, I understand there's they're backed off their northern part of the border. These people's lives are disrupted, the Israelis, because Hezbollah is continuing to rocket and Israel's continuing to take out their Hezbollah higher-ups. That looks like it could be a tinderbox.
Absolutely. And 6 months ago, I thought chances were relatively low, call it 10%, that northern border of Lebanon and Israel could explode into a fireball, 10%. That was 6 months ago. Now, unfortunately, I think it's up in the 25% range. Fortunately, Iran, who we need to point out is the owner and operator of all of these forces, Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthis on the Red Sea, Iran is pretty consumed internally at the moment. So that's why it's as low as 25%. But, Brian, you're right. The next big thing here, as I alluded to a moment ago, is that northern front. Again, that's why the IDF needs to take a break, refit, be ready if they have to go north.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I'm learning too, and we had these cutting edge defense contractors in here that talked about how Silicon Valley is working with the Defense Department, maybe for the first time ever. It was brought up to me, I did not know this, you do, that the F-35 is technology from 2001, and there's got to be a way in real time to be able to use cutting edge technology in our weapon system, and they believe they've begun to do it. But the one thing I heard is the M1A1's Abrams tanks have been useless because these drones are taking them out to the point where they've had to back off the front lines. Have you heard that?
I have heard that, and I have been wondering and watching that tank force, and I think it's not just tanks. You allude to the F-22. I'm concerned about the F-16, which has technology in it from well before the turn of the century. So this is all shape-shifting warfare in real time in Ukraine, and electronic warfare, that ability to manipulate these systems, you're watching it in the back and forth with the drones. We've got to be mindful of it. We've got to tap one of our great comparative advantages is our culture of innovation.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley, Austin, Texas, all of our centers can be part of this, and they need to be.
All right, Admiral James Servetus, lastly, I know they're your friends, but would you like to see a more forceful Secretary of Defense speaking out, talking about tactics, meeting with the press more? I never hear from Secretary Austin. With his military background, invaluable at this time.
I've known Lloyd Austin for decades. He is someone who is always going to keep his own counsel. I can assure you, he is forceful in closed-door meetings. He's not someone who's comfortable in the spotlight.
All right. I would love to see somebody comfortable in the spotlight because I think Americans need some explanations about what we're doing. It would help the funding and help the support.
Yeah.
Okay.
No argument here.
All right. I know you don't want to go back, but hopefully the next administration will have you back in there. You know, I know it's going to be a massive pay cut for you. Admiral, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Brian. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Back in a moment. Listen, I just think you could explain to people what the objective is. You don't have to be a even play Stratego. to have an interest in what's going on. But when you don't hear enough about it, when you see the money going in, you see the weapons going in and out, you see the damage in the carnage, you go, what are we doing? And most people don't have an answer because the administration doesn't talk about it. We have to wait for the Supreme Allied Commander to come on with us, or we have to wait for NATO to come into Washington, where maybe along the way, the president's forced to explain himself. It's a Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Caitlin Clark had an amazing year and is nominated for 3 awards. Caitlin, you are the Larry Bird in that you are an amazing player. You have ties to Indiana, and white people are really crazy about you.
So did you watch the ESPYs at all, Brian?
I did not. Did you hear?
Yeah,
it was
just
delayed.
And then Serena Williams just now giving a little jab. Why was it delayed? I did not hear that.
Because of the press conference. They had to wait for the press conference to be over.
Why did they have to wait for the press conference to be over?
I guess the conflict of the broadcast conflict. I guess no one was covering it on ABC.
Oh, okay.
Well, go ahead. I'm curious. What clip do you have for me?
We actually just played it.
Oh, you did?
We did.
Okay.
It was Serena Williams. She talked about the Caitlin Clark, and then she gave a little jab to the... oh, my gosh, the kicker Harrison of the Chiefs. Bucker. Thank you, Harrison Bucker, for his comments on women.
So guess what? Caitlin Clark, everyone's saying she should go to the Olympics, even though she's not one of the 10 best players.
Mm-hmm.
There's been an injury.
Uh-oh.
And they might be able to add her. Be very interesting if
you
they
think
do.
They would.
I think they would. Yeah. You know, I think that there's very little downside. You can't say, hey, wait a second. She's not a top 12 player, but now you could say next up, the team is already gelled. You had that one player. I think it would be good. I actually, you know, if she's not the 13th player, I'm under the belief she shouldn't be doing it. The other thing that we're seeing, too, is we're seeing a lot of old players get for the men's side. I mean, LeBron James, 38 years old. We're watching a lot of these guys in their late 30s. And I'm wondering, I mean, is it time to turn the page there? And we're seeing the top players taken in the NBA draft are foreigners. They're not Americans anymore. Nobody's learning the fundamentals of the game. I mean, they're still the superstars, the best players, but you know, the Webanaya is the number one prospect in the country, in the world. He's French. The French evidently know how to play basketball. I don't know. They're not working at much else, but they seem to be doing that. I also think that it was a tough spot for Prince Harry. I never say that. But the Tillman family came out and said, you're getting the military award? Are you kidding me? Because he set up the Invictus Games, which allows those soldiers who are banged up in some way, shape, or form in war to compete country after country. But they really felt as though Pat Tillman should have been getting it as opposed to someone who is born into royalty who decides to do this as a charity.
We don't have the cut of him, but the cut I heard this morning of him, he was very, seemed aware of the criticism he got. And he's like, I appreciate it. He's like, this is not an award for me. He's like, this is the award, like, for all of the men and women that play in the Invictus.
He lost his whole identity. He was the tough guy. He was the one not privileged. He was the one insisting on serving the military, insisting on being the infantry, insisting on being in Afghanistan, insisting on being the one of the guys. And the word is, he is really having problems with that, with his wife, who is upset that she doesn't have the status. She left the status. Is upset she doesn't have the status. She has nothing to do. No one really likes her here.
The women
they
ruin
despise
everything.
Her there. Huh?
The women ruin everything, Brian.
Now, I didn't say that.
I mean,
for the
essentially
record.
You did. Yeah, well, it's all her fault.
In this case, am I right?
I mean, he did propose. He is the one that chose to be with her. She didn't force him to do it.
Right, but she didn't know this side of her.
Yeah, I think.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, let's see if I can live up to that hype. I will try. We're going to do a simulcast on Fox News Channel You'll finally get to see what I look like. I'll do that with Julie Banderas on the Faulkner Focus and Shannon Bream at the bottom of the hour. So glad you're here. We're looking at the President of the United States going to be going to Michigan today, try to win over that state, who is not really happy with him. In fact, Governor Whitmer said she didn't say it, but sources say she did, that if Joe Biden's the nominee, Michigan is out of reach. Can you imagine that? Out of reach. How would what about the story that the Biden officials are testing and polling to see if, I guess, Kamala Harris is more effective as a leader of the party? But as of yesterday, last night, I think he's staying. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
On your vice presidential candidate, word is that you won't pick J.D. Vance because of his facial hair. Is that true?
That no. Facial hair. I've never heard that one.
Number two,
no.
Doug Burgum, the thing
he
that hurts.
Like a young Abraham Lincoln.
Right. He's a handsome man. Right. VP stakes. The New York Post endorses Governor Burgum as J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio go dark at the request of the Trump team.
Number two.
RNC starts next week. We will be there starting Sunday. I'll be there, and we'll be there all week long through Friday doing this show and, of course, Fox and Friends. We have the agenda. We have the bullet points. We have the platform, some of the speakers, and the themes.
Number one.
There was the moment at the beginning where he said Vice President Trump instead of Vice President Harris, but he did have lengthy answers on subject areas that he knows very well.
I think it's fair to say there were obviously some verbal missteps. There were some periods of haltingness, but also periods of genuinely impressive command and fluency.
Yes, impressive command and fluency. Did President Biden save his presidency and reelection with his one-hour presser after 8 months, despite the gaffes? I say yes. Many Dems don't agree as Pelosi and Obama huddle behind closed doors to try to kick him out, perhaps. Now, I have to believe that. Why else would Barack Obama greenlight George Clooney's editorial? He would stand in the way and say, listen, don't do this to the guy. Let him work it out. You're an actor who raises a lot of money, but now you also look terrible because you're pointing out things that you should have pointed out 3 weeks ago. You waited for the terrible debate. You notice the vacantness in his eyes. You notice how out of it he seems to be. You saw him stare into the distance while Barack Obama and Bill Clinton were talking on the stage. That's all became clear now that he's so vulnerable. Here's the media talking about his remarks last night. And they were mostly foreign policy. They didn't ask. They only had CBS ask a question. Use some foreign press. Cut one.
Why haven't they had him doing a lot more of these? That really is about as comfortable as he's going to get.
There was the moment at the beginning where he said Vice President Trump instead of Vice President Harris, but he did have lengthy answers on subject areas that he knows very well.
I think it's fair to say there were obviously some verbal missteps. There were some periods of haltingness, but also periods of genuinely impressive command and fluency.
He is not only strong on foreign policy, he is just fundamentally right on foreign policy.
So give some credit where credit is due. It was a solid performance, except for one flub.
And that was Philippe Raines. And prior to that was Chris Hayes. These people have been very critical. And I don't believe, well, that one comment where I just believe he's so great on foreign policy. His foreign policy, he could be as clear as he wants, but his beliefs are flat out scary. And the results have been flat out horrible. So here are some of the headlines. Washington Post. Biden shows foreign policy depth in news conference. NBC News, Biden expounds on policy while his party frets over his delivery. ABC News, Biden solo, unscripted news conference, a pivotal moment in debate rebound effect. New York Times writes again, a high-stakes news conference, Biden vows to finish the job. So there's going to be a meeting this weekend between Hakeem Jeffries, the leader in the House, with Joe Biden. That'll happen over the weekend. We know that Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi are met yesterday on Thursday. We know 17 House members are calling for Biden to withdraw. We know Congressman Scott Peters, a Democrat, says withdraw. Eric Sorensen says withdraw. They also called on Biden to drop out of the race. Scott Peters got in more detail. The attack lines are so familiar and inaccurate. 2025, Google it. It's scary. Okay. It's scary. For who? For people that aren't conservative? There's a lot of things on there that Trump's not going to sign on to. He doesn't think they're popular enough. It doesn't mean it's not a great document with a lot of smart people. It's the Heritage Foundation's findings. But the president outlined what exactly what he wants to do. and what they actually stand for. And it's really not complicated. He thinks that he's got the sweet spot. Seal the border. Carry out the largest deportation operation in American history. End inflation. Make America the dominant energy producer. Stop outsourcing and turn the United States into a manufacturing power. Tax cuts for workers. No tax on tips. Defend our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our fundamental freedoms. These are basic things. It goes about 20 deep. Keep men out of women's sports. Does that upset you? Cut federal funding for any schools pushing critical race theory. Does that surprise you? Cancel the electric vehicle mandate and cut costly, burdensome regulations. Yes. Let the electric vehicle compete across the country. He's not anti-electric, nor is the party, but it should be a choice. Rebuild our cities, including Washington. Strengthen and modernize our military. I think you should double the budget. Keep the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. They're desperately trying to knock it out. So when we come back, I'm going to go on television, and then at the back end of that, maybe squeeze in some calls. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to do a simulcast on television. It's kind of cool. You can follow us on the stream on your phone. Look on watch. You can listen. Just click on headsets on the app. This both on the app. Or you go to BrianKilmeadeShow.com. It'll just pop up. Click on it there. Hopefully you're in a family of affiliates and you have a way to stream to get that. But then at one point, we'll be able to stream. We'll be on Fox Nation, be on the app, as well as Fox News Channel. And that's pretty cool. And that's why this show continues to grow. I mean, we added a great station in Richmond, great station in Dallas, great station in Hartford, Connecticut. We're now added in Hawaii. That just came on board. Some other shows just added us on the weekends. There's a lot going on. And next week, we have such a great lineup. And we're going to keep it fluid. So with those extra mics open, we have no idea who's going to be walking around at the convention. If I remember correctly, it's been 4 years. Remember, last time we didn't have a convention, or we didn't go. We didn't go to the convention because of the pandemic. So it's almost like the Super Bowl. When the Super Bowl you go out, you don't overbook the Super Bowl because you look up and there's Drew Brees. You look up and there's Aaron Rodgers. And you want to be open. And if you already have somebody on, it kind of hamstrings you. But we have a great roster of guests. One person I really hope to catch up with is Dana White. We talked to him 3 weeks ago. Also, Jim Justice is going to be there. I think that's going to be great. Jim Justice is a huge personality. He's kept a low profile after he got the nomination, which was inevitable. He basically is going to grab Joe Manchin's seat. He's become a self-made multimillionaire. He actually owns just about all of West Virginia. He's been a very effective governor. Governor Ron DeSantis is going to be speaking for a while. They didn't get a quick answer, but that's going to be important. Rachel Marin is going to be there. And, you know, sadly, Rachel Marin's family, her mom and a mom of five, she was found murdered last August, of course, in the hands of an illegal immigrant. It just expounds on a bigger problem. We're getting a lot of criminals coming across our border. Doesn't mean everybody's a criminal, but they're breaking the law by coming here the way they're doing it. Sean O'Brien's going to be there. He's a Teamster president. Now, Sean O'Brien is not recommending they vote for Trump, but he is open to Trump. And Donald Trump gets along with unions. For those people who are Republicans, they're not used to that statement because traditionally that's Democratic cause. But if you're Donald Trump and you're building things in major cities, every city's unionized. You are using unions on a regular basis. Those men who come to visit you, you do negotiations, they get deals. They get their goal is to get people working. Donald Trump's goal is to get things built. And what happens is if they could promise projects to get their people working, they also cut deals. So Donald Trump's got a good reputation with unions, and he still hopes to make more inroads there. And many of these leaders say, a lot of my guys and my women, not as many, are going to vote for Donald Trump. And President Trump's going to be there, too. The guy who's going to introduce him is UFC President Dana White. But we're also going to see, I am sure, the contenders. whether it's the contenders end up being Marco Rubio, end up being Governor Burgum, end up being Governor Youngkin, the contenders end up being J.D. Vance, one of them's going to become the running mate. Ben Carson's in the mix and Tim Scott. One of them's going to be the running mate. But I'm sure they're all going to have a chance to speak. Personally, if I'm a guy like Doug Burgum, if I'm a Senator Marco Rubio, anybody there, and except J.D. Vance, 39 years old, first term in the Senate. If you don't get this, sit back, wait for your turn. I would just be just as content joining the cabinet. Just, you could really make a name for yourself. So let's listen in together and hear my introduction.
Not medical. Their concern about him is electoral, not moral. They're, none of them are out there saying, I love this man. I want him to step aside. He needs medical intervention. They're saying, oh, he's going to cost us the White House and the House and the Senate. Here comes Trump back because of Joe Biden.
Kellyanne Conway with her take on Biden's Democratic critics. Brian Kilmeade is with me. We go to simulcast now this next segment with him on his radio show, and we start here. A few more bricks out of the wall. Biden's support from Democratic lawmakers continues to crumble. The Wall Street Journal with this headline, Biden's press conference won't stem tide of defections. Four more House Democrats called on Biden to drop from the race after he spoke last night. That brings the total up to 18 now. Congressman Jim Himes, the top Democrat on the Intel Committee, is one of them.
No president has ever been reelected with the disapproval ratings that our current president, love him as we do, has. And so I will not stand silent as I see a trajectory to an electoral loss that leads to the presidency of Donald Trump and all that he has promised.
Biden officials met with Senate Democrats yesterday, where they were reportedly unsuccessful in calming fears about Biden's future. Vulnerable senators John Tester and Sherrod Brown were both no-shows. The Hill reports Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer told some Democratic senators that he has serious doubts about Biden's reelection chances, but he says he won't undermine the president publicly. A CNN reporter with some colorful info on how the White House is pushing back on Democratic critics.
This is what one top Democrat told me. They said everyone who expresses any level of suspicion or contrary views, they call everyone and they beat the out of them and say, stay on message. One thing that White House spokesperson Andrew Bates said in a part of the statement was, Joe Biden has always said that it is fair for reporters to ask about his age.
Brian Kilmeade, co-host of Fox and Friends and host of One Nation and the Brian Kilmeade radio show, simulcasts with us now. Brian, great to see you. I think, you know, the cognitive decline is one thing. His ability to win the election for Democrats is another. Never in history has a Democrat lost a reelection since Jimmy Carter in 1970. I think the concern is the divided party. I don't think there's any chance that the Democratic Party could possibly unite this far in the game with so little time left.
Well, it's fascinating. All things is unprecedented. And Julie, I'm giving you a pass. Yeah. I'm wondering, I was asking Allison, our producer here, why you haven't done the show. I can see you're busy. So
yeah,
now this is considered your appearances. But to answer your question, you had a primary. He got all the delegates. That's the way it works. The last competitive primary, legitimate one they had, was Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton. They got this. They got two really experienced candidates. They get this young guy named Barack Obama who becomes a two-term president. The next time through, they said, we don't want a competitive primary because Bernie Sanders might win. So, you had Donna Brazile giving the questions, Debbie Wasserman Schultz running the DNC, making sure that Hillary won and that she loses the nomination. Well, then all of a sudden, Bernie Sanders is about to win again. They put their hand on the scale. Clyburn names Biden. Now they go through a whole primary season. Don't run against Joe Biden. You heard me. Don't buck the party. Dean Phillips tries. They kick RFK out of the party. And now they're upset that they have Joe Biden. This is what you got. Yesterday showed that's the guy you nominated. He had a few faux pas, a few flubs, but he looked for an hour, coherent. That's the guy you got. Now you want to upset your own process, the rules that you made, and you want to pick somebody else because, not because he's mentally ill, but because his poll numbers are down. Excuse me, that's not the way it works. I don't think, you know, I don't think that President Biden is budging.
I don't think he believes in the polls either, so he's not listening to anyone. Top House Democrat Hakeem Jeffries, by the way, just sent a letter to his colleagues about a private meeting he had with Biden last night. Listen to this. He doesn't expressly back him, but he does not call for him to step aside either. This is what he writes. On behalf of the House Democratic Caucus, I requested and was graciously granted a private meeting with President Biden. That meeting occurred yesterday evening. In my conversation with President Biden, I directly expressed the full breadth of insight, heartfelt perspectives, and conclusions about the path forward that the caucus has shared in our recent time together. As House Democrats have done throughout this Congress, we will continue to work in the best interests of everyday Americans. Brian, not exactly a rousing endorsement from the House Democratic leader.
But he didn't jump off the ship.
No.
We're waiting for him to jump off the ship, or eventually Schumer to jump off the ship. And James Clyburn is on the ship. And I would argue that he's got more power than Nancy Pelosi. He's got more vigor, too. And he's got the Congressional Black Caucus, 60 members. And Obama, who has not spoken up and come out in front of the cameras. And if so, I think he's risking his own legacy, because that's the guy you picked as number two, who you tell us he's your good friend. And you can't even work out something that doesn't have you sneaking behind closed doors to maybe stab him in the back.
Yeah.
So this is and I asked President Trump this on Wednesday, on Wednesday. And I said, who do you want? Who do you want to go against? He paused. He says, it doesn't matter. It's the policies. It's not the person. It's the breaking of the border. It's the foreign policy, a war in the Middle East, a war in Eastern Europe, in stubborn inflation. What's going on with China? We have not spent on a defense budget enough to even outstrip inflation. So we are beginning to diminish as a power. Please tell me what you're running on, Mr. President. Past spending programs, many of which aren't spending because nothing's getting done. That's what Trump wants to run against. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Democrats are upset with the track record, and they should be more upset with what they've not done as opposed to the person who's running. He's not giving up 3,900 delegates. They're also working the phones, calling the delegates. They're asking them, are you firmly in President Biden's camp? And you know, if they say no, you know what they say? You're out. They're getting rid of the delegates.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Brian Kilmeade, I promise I will reach out to your team and be on with you very shortly.
Your team, talk to my team.
I will. I don't really have a team, but I'll just reach out to them.
I thought you did.
Well, I'm not Brian Kilmeade. All right, Brian. Love you. Good to see you.
Back at you, Julie. How much time do I have left? Not much, right? Well, I have 20 seconds. I do have time to tease Shannon Bream coming up. Guess what President Trump wants to do? Knock off the case that convicted him 34 times in New York. Does he have a case? Shannon Bream will tell me.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I just think it's better. I always have an inclination, whether I was playing sports or doing politics, just to keep going, not stop. I just got to just pace myself a little more. Pace myself. And the next debate, I'm not going to be traveling in the 15 time zones a week before. Anyway, that's what it was about.
By the way, he didn't go 15 time zones. It was an exaggeration, but he was also off for 12 days. And the word is he doesn't work past 8 o'clock ever. Now he says his problem is he gets up at 7 working until midnight. I've never heard that before, even from his allies, even from his wife. He says, I love my staff, but they keep adding to my schedule. Okay, throw them under the bus. So the briefers were too detailed, overprepared, and now his staff gives him too much to do. And then he tells Democratic governors he promised to work less. Shannon Bream works more, does everything. Anchor of Fox News Sunday, that's most on her mind after this crazy week. Shannon, I don't even know. I mean, I'm going to go live on Saturday night on One Nation. I got my hands full. What about you in the morning on Sunday? What do you think the main story will be?
Whether or not President Biden could do your schedule. We all know that's like the gold standard,
right,
of what people can keep up with your 10 different jobs.
Do you think I could run a country?
I don't know. Don't you sort of? Don't you run the country of Fox News?
No, I don't think so. I think that's Gutfeld.
I do know that you both do a lot of shows and a lot of hours. Listen, Sunday, you try to come up with the best plan just like you do for Saturday night, not knowing whether anything will have changed on the D side of the ticket, whether we'll have the GOP VP. So I would say that these shows on weekends like this are very fluid, flexible. We're flexible.
So I'm thinking right now he did enough to stay in. I think it's a worse scenario for Democrats. I think they did good enough. He was typical Joe Biden. You know, whether you like his answers or his policies doesn't matter. I think he achieved his goals. Here's more on his schedule. Cut eight.
And if you look at my schedule since I made that stupid mistake in the debate, I mean, my schedule has been full bore. I've done where's Trump been? Riding around in his golf cart, filling out his scorecard before he hits the ball. I mean, look. He's done virtually nothing. And I have, I don't know how many, don't hold me to it, roughly 20 major events, some of them with thousands of people showing up.
Well, Shannon, why do you think Trump's not doing anything? Do you think he's lazy? Or do you think he's watching this dumpster fire on the left?
Yeah, and I think a lot of his supporters are like, good, we don't want him doing anything while this is playing out. Let the headlines speak for themselves and let him just kind of lay low with his social media posts and do his thing. But the fact that President Biden is talking about this grueling schedule now, this is the kind of schedule that most presidential candidates keep.
Yes.
They're in multiple states, they're in multiple cities, and yes, many of them do it while they are sitting as the current commander-in-chief. So I don't know that you get credit on now coming up with the schedule, which is his folks and his team think clearly we got to get him out there. He's going to be in Detroit today. He's got to do some retail politicking. People need to see him off a prompter. But that's what presidential campaigns are. So when he's saying things like, well, the campaign hasn't started in earnest yet, you've already had a debate. So, I mean, people have been campaigning.
They have been. Jim Himes wants him out. He doesn't fully realize that they had a primary season. They chose not to run anybody. Nobody said a word about it. Nobody said, man, he looks old. He's failing behind the scenes. He doesn't have cabinet. He does not have meetings with his cabinet. Needs note cards to know where to sit. Congressman Jim Himes of Connecticut, cut 20.
And it pains me to say that because Joe Biden, his legacy is top 10 presidential material. It is absolutely a remarkable legacy. But if you don't look at this in a cold, hard way, you will be complicit in Donald Trump's second presidency. And I'm confident the bench is deep amongst Democrats. It really is. And I don't know who the next candidate should be. I could name a dozen Democrats who I believe would not only galvanize African Americans, women, the youth vote, et cetera, but who I'm very confident could convey the message of the remarkable achievements.
Right, nice try. Remarkable achievement, top 10 president. Okay, move over Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. But now he says this. If it was 2023, I'd find it fascinating. But what are they, don't they understand? You missed the regular season, and now you want to pick the people in the playoffs. How do you like that for an analogy?
I like that. And I also look forward to your presidential book on President Biden, because then you can put it in historical context
for us, as
you have with many other presidents.
Right.
That will just illuminate the situation and you can decide if he's in the top 10. The thing is, we all know that everybody within the party pretty much knew. I mean, if you're talking about not having cabinet meetings, like you said, for months and months, and we're told that some of the meetings like that and with his own administration, that people were supposed to submit questions in advance of a meeting with his own, you know, cabinet or other advisors for the administration. This was not a secret. And the only thing that makes this different now is that they know the American people saw that debate, and now it's not a secret from anybody. So, you know, George Clooney, if you're going to say this guy was not okay 3 weeks ago, if you were so worried about country and national security and the future of democracy, why didn't you say something then? It's only, you know, most of us would pause it because now the whole country has seen a very difficult performance in that June 27th debate. And so you guys look disingenuous now.
You do. So I think it's hysterical. We have the on DVR as a family. For some reason, we used to tape the Tonight Show when it was funny, and we never stopped DVRing it. I stopped looking at it until the last 2 weeks, and they're going to town on it. And they're going to town on this president like he's Donald Trump all of a sudden.
Exactly.
Cut 41.
Yep, the whispers about him dropping out of the race keep getting louder. They're getting so loud, Biden can almost hear them.
We also learned today that some Biden advisors are discussing how to convince him to step aside. That is not going to be easy. Okay, they're thinking about just putting a Klondike bar on a string and pulling it slowly down Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah. Come on, let's go. Come on.
Biden's conference today was a big deal because it was unscripted. Like the whole country got invited to our grandpa's level one improv class.
So they're mocking him. That is the last sign.
Well, and the thing is, he's now using the language, the elites are coming after me. And so conservatives are like, welcome to our world, you know, Mr. President. The elites, the moment they decide that it benefits them to turn on you, they will. You were their guy. Now that they think you may give them back Donald Trump by refusing to stand down, they will do whatever it has to take. It doesn't matter how many millions of dollars they've raised for you or how you're the pro-choice president or whatever. The minute that you're, you know, not useful to them, it's clear that they take a turn. And they're so afraid of and so opposed to President Trump that not much else matters now in their universe.
So this just crossed. Donors to a pro-Biden super PAC are said to be withholding roughly $90 million. The frozen contributions include multiple eight-figure commitments, according to two people who spoke on the condition of not talking about their names. Future Forward, that's the name of the PAC, declined to comment on any conversation with donors or amount of any pledged money. The two people briefed on the frozen pledges declined to say what individual donors were pulling back, which was estimated a total around $90 million. In a news conference on Thursday, as you know, President Biden dug in, saying, quote, I believe I'm the best qualified to govern and the best qualified to win. But he ended up telling David Axelrod, I mean, at the end, saying, until I see polls that say I can't win, I'll be the guy. Is that the next step? Show him the polls?
Well, and you wonder who hasn't been showing him the polls. I mean, he seemed very insulated when he did that sit down with ABC last week. Remember, then it was only the Lord Almighty, and I quote, would be able to come down and tell him to get out of the race. Now he's saying, well, if they could show me polls, and we, you know, according to the New York Times, they're doing internal polling of Kamala versus Trump. I mean, they're doing all kinds of different configurations, testing out her strength to potentially get to the top of the ticket. So what polls are they not showing him? Like, if he gets the morning papers, if he watches Morning Joe, which we're told is one of his favorites, and he does, like, they're talking about the polls. So it seemed a little strange that he said last night, for the first time, you know, there are other Democrats who could beat President Trump. And if my team can show me by polling that I can't win, then I'll step down. So as determined as he is, and as much as he's doubled down on not leaving the race, it seems like even he is leaving this little sliver, because how many Democrats pounced on that last night and said, here are the polls, Mr. President. Why aren't they showing them to you?
So tell me about 2025 and Heritage Foundation's relationship with the Trump team. That is, seems to be the mantra. Democrats are desperately trying to change the narrative. They want to point to this 900-page book that they put out, a think tank. And I spoke in front of Heritage, the great people. Kevin Roberts leads it. But they are strongly pro-life. They're pro. They're strongly traditional marriage. They talk about blowing up the Department of Education, as does Trump, by the way. So how is this going to be a big story? Is this something you're going to cover on Sunday?
Yeah, because we're going to be with the RNC chair, Michael Whatley, and we'll talk about it with the panel and others, too. Okay, what part of this do you, don't you embrace? Because the RNC and Trump have said this does not reflect us at all. We have our politics and our policy positions. Agenda 47. Reference to President Trump wanting to be 47th president, and the RNC platform, which has been married to that. And they say, listen, we don't know anything about this Heritage thing. We're not directly involved with it. Now, there are a ton of former Trump staffers who are involved with it, people who worked in his administration. Their
Tom
whole
Homan.
Goal is, yeah, I mean, the whole goal is if he wins a second term, they don't want him to be caught flat-footed. They want people who have submitted their resumes, agree with these conservative positions, and are ready to go. You know, Kevin Roberts says, you know, These are just suggestions. President Trump isn't obligated to any of this. He hasn't been involved with any of this, but we believe it does reflect grassroots conservatism, and we want him to have people ready when he needs to fill positions if he wins.
So who do you know you're going to have on Sunday?
So we are going to have Michael Whatley. We have, I think, finally scored a Democrat who is going to come on and defend President Biden's decision to stay on the ticket. We are trying to lock that in right now. As you know, last week we spent days trying to get someone and couldn't get a single person from the campaign or anywhere else.
I know.
But hopefully we can announce that shortly. And I think we may have Milwaukee's mayor with us too, Cavalier Johnson, young, kind of up-and-coming guy. And we have brand new polls we are releasing on Fox News Sunday, our first round of polls since the debate.
Right. And do you have something to ask me?
Who do you have on Saturday night? And I'm assuming it will be a live show this week.
Yes. So we're going to have Tom Cotton, Kimberly Strassel. We're going to have the president of Finland. Also, I'm going to have the Ruthless podcast on. So we'll be able to ride the news while giving a perspective. This is one of those shows where it's so well booked. All I have to do is say hello.
Well, and it carries itself from there. When are you getting to Milwaukee?
I'm getting there Sunday night. And then, what about when are you getting there?
I am already here. I'm speaking to you from our workspace, and we are getting all of the things that you demanded on your list. It's a bit of a scavenger hunt for us running around Milwaukee, getting the specific pillows and snacks and stuff. But I promise that we'll have it done by Sunday. Just wanted to know when you were getting here so we'd be sure.
Well, you know, I'm a MyPillow guy, and there's all these innovations and deals that are changing all the time. So wait till the last minute to make the purchase.
We make dog beds. We'll have a little bit of everything. Bring the dogs. We'll have the dog beds too.
All right. I can't wait, Channel. Let's think of some topics. Jot down some topics so we have something, because we're very different people. So we need things to talk about.
Okay. I'll see you Sunday night.
Go get them. Watch Fox
News
Sunday.
On your show.
Exactly. Shannon Bream is going to be busy on Saturday night. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Earlier you misspoke in your opening answer and referred to Vice President Harris as Vice President Trump. Right now Donald Trump is using that to mock your age and your memory. How do you combat that criticism from tonight?
Listen to him.
Yeah, was that the dumbest retort ever? So listen to Trump. Trump said, all right, do you want to hear what he said? I mean, what basically he was asked, the very first question, is Kamala Harris ready to take over? Cut two.
What concerns do you have about Vice President Harris's ability to beat Donald Trump if she were at the top of the ticket?
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she's not qualified to be president.
Okay. Is there anything wrong with that? Or am I being overly critical? Is there anything wrong with that sentence, Allison? Listen closely. He said his running mate is Donald Trump, and then he called her a she. Called him a she.
I thought it was completely on brand for Biden.
That's unbelievable. So Trump is Truth Social. That he's got 7 million followers. A lot of them go, and a lot of people are watching because he did a lot of foreign policy, but they did desperately try to get him to comment on Kamala Harris being the number two. If they did a quick poll in the Washington Post ABC poll, they said, if not Biden, who? 29% want Kamala Harris. You might think that's low, but that's the highest. 7% want Newsom. The rest are three people, Buttigieg and others, registering at 3%. Nobody knows who Governor Whitmer is outside Michigan, even though she's on a book tour. So she's and she's not really defending him the way I thought she would be. I thought she'd say, listen, he's the best, almost like Senator Chris Coons, but he's not. Listen to what Charlamagne the God and Governor Whitmer were talking about on his show, The Breakfast Club, Cut 25.
Y'all should be offended. People will say, is this the best America has to offer? Is this the best the Democratic Party has to offer? And Biden?
The fact that there maybe Joe Biden doesn't resonate as well with every one of, you know, every voter that's out there. I think that every voter can see a voice, a person that is a part of this effort that does, though.
Do you think he should debate again?
I don't know. You know, it doesn't seem as though people go into debates with open minds these days.
He should not debate again. I can't believe that she bailed on him twice. Remember, she said maybe he should take that cognitive test. She could have got out of that in 2 seconds. So why is she doing this?
I mean, why is everyone not getting out of it and leaving so much room? They're trying to be respectful, but not.
So let's talk about who's going to be number two. Now for Trump in the last few minutes. So we have Charlamagne the God will not be Trump's number two. But we just heard from Whitmer, who might be on number one or number two. If Kamala Harris gets in, a lot of people think Whitmer's a natural. I don't know if they get along. Who knows? But it's a battleground state. And then Governor Shapiro is the other logical person. Then there's Gavin Newsom. But you already have California. People in California don't like him anyway. He would never be number two on a ticket. So think about this. You got Marco Rubio, who was going to come on with us if we taped the show on Friday, One Nation. He said on Saturday, they said that the campaign wants them to go dark. But when I mentioned to Governor Burgum, I heard you guys going to go dark. He said, I never heard that. He goes, I have a state to run. I can't go dark.
So was Rubio just, was that his nice way to say, nah, I have better plans on Saturday?
I am so naive. I actually believe people. No, but he was, I think he might, someone's going to be at that Pennsylvania rally on Saturday. I know one is going to be J.D. Vance. Ohio's right there. So you got those three. Governor Youngkin is four. People have speculated that Youngkin wouldn't take it. There's no way he wouldn't take it. Of course he would take it. Listen to what he said yesterday with Larry Kudlow, Cut 26.
It's common sense. And I think it's time that our nation reintroduces itself to common sense. I also think it's time that our nation reintroduces itself to strength. And what we've seen from the Biden-Harris administration is weakness. Weakness in foreign policy that's resulted in chaos around the world. Weakness in the economy that has unleashed inflation like we've never seen. And, of course, weakness at the border that has allowed chaos to drive every state to become a border state. I mean,
come on. That's not, these aren't Virginia topics. These are national topics. That's what these guys thinking. And Admiral Stavridis, who worked with Governor Youngkin when he was in the at the Carlisle Group, says as smart as anyone he's been around. And that says a lot. He's Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. So I think if he's asked, he's in. After all, he's one termed out in Virginia.
Which is true. And then the other point that someone made is if you're the VP now, you are the heir apparent in 4 years.
It's going to be exciting. See you Saturday night at 9. I want you to meet me in Stroudsburg, too, on the 27th of July. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.